This week on Pop of Culture, we're all in on Tiny Desk.
It's a place where I feel like everybody goes to for like comfort in some way, shape, or another. Like, we've all had an artist that we are like feel so personal with.
It's really about a live music experience that, you know, we take away the in-ears, we take away the monitors, and we give people something really, really stripped down.
We'll talk to a local band in the 2025 Tiny Desk Contest and one of the hosts of NPR's new show, Tiny Desk Radio. Then we'll refurbish some furniture. Coming up!
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by Psi Iota Xi. Additional support comes from the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, and sustaining members of IPR. You can support local programming today at indianapublicradio.org.
From IPR, this is Pop of Culture. I'm Kara Duquette.
And I'm Michelle Kinsey. Public radio has become one of the last places to truly discover new music. And one of our favorite shows doing that is NPR's Tiny Desk Concerts.
NPR is launching a brand new show all about the series, and we'll talk to one of the hosts in just a few minutes.
We're also in the middle of the 2025 Tiny Desk Contest, so we thought we'd call up one of the local bands that entered.
We are speaking with IPR's local favorite from NPR's 2025 Tiny Desk Contest, Sundial. And we're happy to have you with us.
Woohoo! We're happy to be here.
Happy to be here.
Excellent. Can you all please start by introducing yourselves for us and what you do in the band?
Hi, I'm Emma Torres. I'm the vocalist.
And I'm Ben Butel. I'm the bass player.
And Carlos Rosa, our drummer, is also here.
Excellent. I want to know, how did your band form? How'd you get together?
We got together almost 2 years ago, July of 2023. It kind of started out as a mutual jam session that was happening between our sax player, Ashton Morris, and our drummer, Carlos Rosa. And kind of from then on, they met with our original guitarist, Luke Delgado, and he introduced them to me, Ben Butel and Ben Francis, our bass and keys player. We got them in October of that year. And yeah, it's kind of been history since then.
Excellent. So the jamming brought you together. I want to know what. So I've listened to some of your music, which is fabulous. And what genre do you feel like your music fits into? What's your vibe?
That's tough.
Oh, that is tough. Well, thank you for saying that too.
No, it's hard to pinpoint. I think
it's so cool that people are loving the music that the way that we do. So thank you for saying that. I'd say we originally started. We wanted to form kind of a jazz fusion R&B neo soul type of vibe, but right now it's kind of forming into, you know, we play a lot of funk, we play a lot of mainstream more pop music, and I guess you could say it's got a couple twangs of indie in it sometimes too, so it's really hard to put a label on it. But I think right now we're kind of still sticking with that jazz fusion and R&B feel.
Oh, I think it was so hard for me to form that question because I was hard pressed to come up with labels, and I think you did a really good job in giving us a feeling.
Thank you.
I wanted to delve a little deeper into your process for creating songs, if you could talk about it a little bit.
It's kind of funny. We don't have a blueprint, I would say, at all. I mean, we each on our own, like me personally, I'm not good at sitting in a group and thinking of lyrics on the spot or melodies on the spot, but it's this soup of every single one of us. We write our own parts, but everybody has a say in everything. So if somebody, you know, brings to the table a fully formed song, it's going to sound completely different than the way that it started.
Mm. Yeah, and a lot of times what we'll do is if we'll have maybe like two or three of us get together sometimes to write if we're looking to write something or just kind of hanging out to play. Mm-hmm. But we'll record it and we'll put it up for everybody. And then like Emma can take it and try and come up with a melody or her lyrics or, you know, whoever's not there can kind of like listen to it and maybe think of a part or even we've had times where they'll be like, I really like this, but what if the feel was this way? Or what if we slowed it down? Or, you know, like those kind of things. Because we come from different places, we all have these different kind of tools in our arsenals. So like our keyboard player, Ben Francis, that couldn't be here today because he's not feeling well. He does a lot with, he likes to build his own synth sounds and he loves to run synthesizers and those kind of things. And so every song that we bring to him, he'll try and come up with a new sound for it, which really kind of changes the feel. Me coming from the jazz background, I'm big on kind of playing the bass all over the place. So it's still a really nice collaborative process most of the time.
You can hear the collaborative flow. I will say that.
Well, that's good. I'm glad. Yeah. But it takes, you know, it still takes work.
Fool's gold is always blue. Trusted you. Tomorrow may not be the same. God, I miss how you said my name.
So my next question is, as we were talking about who's doing the lyrics and like how you freeform, like, so if I went and listened to your concert, it would be very different than some of the recordings I've heard, possibly.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I'd say like, cause we released our debut album Mirror almost a year ago. So we've been playing these songs and we went on a tour last summer, which was awesome, but we've been playing these songs for quite some time. Even before the album was released. And yeah, we're all a little crazy. We like to change it up.
Dude, yeah. I mean, I think modulating is like one of my favorite things to experiment with. It's like super difficult to do, but like when you can put a completely different rhythm over what you got, like what we're already playing, and like it's like not the same anymore, but then we can switch right back to it and go back to what we were doing before. Like that's like one of the coolest things in music, in my opinion. So I mean, anytime I get to do that, that's like a huge treat.
Heck yeah.
Well, I see you're booked up through the summer, so there's going to be a lot of opportunities to listen to you. Well, I must know, why Tiny Desk? Why did you all want to be a part of NPR Tiny Desk?
Hi, this is Carlos.
Hey, Carlos.
I don't know if you, I mean, are familiar with the series. Like I mean, of course you are, obviously, but...
I've heard of
like, it. Obviously, that YouTube series is just like it's massive. Like it's a place where I feel like everybody goes to for like comfort in some way, shape, or another. Like we've all had an artist that we are like feel so personal with, like beyond that like series, and we're just like, dude, a chance to be on that, like that's awesome. Plus, I mean, the quality always sounds super cool, and it's like I want my playing to come through that clean, you know, like.
Well, not only that too, you see like artists that you're familiar with, and then you see artists that you've never heard of before. And it's just a great place to find new music and to connect.
I completely agree with that. Well, I just wanted to really thank you all for talking to us. And it's been quite a pleasure to get to know you all a little bit.
Yeah, no, this has been great.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for taking the time to have us on.
Agreed. Thank you so much for having us.
We've been talking with the band Sundial. And as a special podcast treat, let's listen to their 2025 Tiny Desk Contest entry, Stones.
Thank you.
tuned into Pop of Culture. I'm Kara Duquette.
And I'm Michelle Kinsey. NPR Music is launching Tiny Desk Radio on April 17th, exclusively for public radio stations like Indiana Public Radio. Here to tell us all about it is one of the hosts, Anna Maria Sayre. Anna Maria, thank you so much for joining us on Pop of Culture.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Can you tell I'm already excited about the show Tiny Desk?
I know, I can feel it.
One of my favorite
as
things.
As excited as you are.
Yes, I never miss an episode on the YouTubes. So what I want to know is, how did this come about?
Yeah, I think in many ways, you know, it's a natural next step. Obviously, Tiny Desk concerts are a video series, but one of the things, or probably one of the predominant things that makes it so special, is the audio, the mixes. It's really about a live music experience that, you know, we take away the in-ears, we take away the monitors, and we give people something really, really stripped down. And so I think it made sense then to take that and give people an opportunity to hear it, even if they haven't seen it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, and it's not like you don't have enough on your plate, Anna Maria. You
thank you for saying that out loud.
You already co-host Alt Latino and you curate the Latin music for Tiny Desk. Why was it important for you to co-host? Why did you want to do the Tiny Desk radio show?
You know, I've been asking myself that a lot lately. No, you know, I think for me, my priority in everything that I do and all of the coverage that I have a role in and all of the productions I do for Tiny Desk is really giving people a sense of what makes music so special and, more importantly, so powerful and so true. I think it is one of the most authentic forms of expression, talk, communication that we have at this moment. And so it's really important to me to give people, not only expose people to artists who have something important to say, but also give them an opportunity to understand exactly why that is, to dig into that power a little bit more, to access it themselves. And so I think, to me, the opportunity to be able to explain a little bit further about why some of these artists, you know, you can feel something in your heart, but not quite verbalize out loud maybe what it is. It's exciting for me to be able to dig into that a little more.
Oh, that's awesome. For people that may not be familiar with Tiny Desk concerts, and really, where have you been if you are not familiar with this? But if they aren't, talk a little bit about the wide variety of genres that they will be exposed to on Tiny Desk Radio.
Yeah, I mean, it's really just a representation of what is our curation on the Tiny Desk concert series. So, you know, we bring artists from quite literally all over the world. It's really important, I think, always to note that not only it's a global platform in every sense, right? Like, we bring artists from everywhere. We also have an audience that is from everywhere, truly. I don't think people realize how international this platform is. And so I think it's just like you'll be exposed. There's no genre or part of the world that you probably won't be exposed to.
I love that. Now, this is going to be a little different from, like, if you just watch a Tiny Desk concert, you tune in, you see four or five songs from the artist, maybe some stories in between. This goes to another level. Talk a little bit about what else listeners to Tiny Desk Radio can expect to hear.
Yeah, so we're going to provide a little bit more of context. Like I kind of mentioned, you know, it's gonna be, what was it like in the room? Why did we bring a certain artist? What was happening in the world around when we brought that artist? Why are they specifically, you know, their art, their message? Why was that something that we needed to platform on the series? So it's really just gonna be a lot of kind of a little bit more context around what makes it so magical.
Awesome. Can you talk a little bit about maybe some of your favorite Tiny Desk performances?
You know, what's your favorite Tiny Desk is probably one of my most asked questions in life, and I manage to evade it every single time it's asked. I say, oh, you know, it depends on my mood or the day or whatever, which is true.
Yes.
But I will say, at least for me, some of my shows that I've done that I've been the most proud of would probably be The Argentine duo Catriel y Paco Amoroso.
Oh my gosh.
The recent Dochi Tiny Desk done by my colleague Ashley Pointer is absolutely incredible. Really just, I think these are, to me, those are two examples of shows that have like truly raised the bar on what a Tiny Desk can be. It's really become its own distinct art platform.
Absolutely.
To create a show for the space is really, it's its own type of art. So, yeah.
I agree 5,000%. And Ana Maria, I have to thank you personally at this point for turning me on to Catriel y Paco, because I became immediately obsessed have now seen everything they've ever done, going back to bands that they were in a long time ago, from bands to everything else. But
that makes
I think that's what truly, honestly makes Tiny Desk special, because every time you turn it on, maybe it's someone you're familiar with, but you're seeing them in a different context. You're hearing them in a different way. And I really think they share themselves in a different way. So if you're familiar with an artist, you kind of get a different version of that artist. If you're not familiar with that artist, I think NPR Music does a phenomenal job of curating the bands that are featured on the program. So I guess this is just my what you and the team do. Can you give us any like hints, any information about upcoming Tiny Desk Radio episodes you're excited about?
My goodness. Yeah. I mean, we're going to obviously explore some of the classics, some of our biggest hits. We're going to explore Catriel y Paco for sure. I will give you all of the story from when I first met them in Buenos Aires having them there on the day. So things like that, you know, we're going to talk about that initial really special one, T-Pain.
Yeah.
Introduce you to artists that, you know, you don't know, or you're not invested in the story yet because you haven't heard the show. Mm-hmm. So we'll do some of that stuff, too.
That's fantastic. What do you get out of being a part of the Tiny Desk Radio? What do you do it for? What does music mean to you? What does it bring to your life, Ana Maria?
Oh, it's everything. it's love. It's pain. It's comfort. It's growth. It's, like I said, it's what I recenter myself on all the time. I think, you know, the world is confusing and complicated, mm-hmm. and painful. Mm-hmm. And music is its truth. It's people talking to people. I always tell my musician friends, I'm like, you guys are the magicians who are able to tap in to the feelings that we all feel, and put them into something everyone can experience and grow from and connect with. So, yeah, music is power.
Oh, I love that. Absolutely. And it's also, I mean, right now, like release, it can be cathartic, right? It could be exactly
joy.
What we need to kind of
joy.
Absolutely. 100% joy that we need to, you know, get through the day. What else do we need to know about Tiny Desk Radio that we haven't talked about yet? What else do we need to know in anticipation of April 17th, counting down the days?
Oh my goodness. I think get ready to dance in your car, maybe, or if you're walking around, I don't know, wherever you're listening. I'm always a big proponent. I always say like the world is like my one big karaoke bar. Because I'm always singing. So I hope everyone sings along too and dances and just has fun with it.
Absolutely. Well, this has been an absolute pleasure. We are so excited for April 17th and the premiere of Tiny Desk Radio. Thank you for bringing it to Indiana Public Radio. We look forward to it, and we look forward to the future of all of these in-depth interviews and behind-the-scenes stories from Tiny Desk concerts.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Excited to share it with you all and hear what you all think.
Thank you so much, Ana Maria. You can hear NPR's Tiny Desk Radio starting next Thursday, April 17th at 8 p.m. on IPR. Or catch it right after Pop of Culture on Friday, April 18th.
The Indianapolis Motor Speedway Museum just reopened after a 17-month $60.5 million renovation project. The museum includes a display about the winner's wreath, made every year by local florist Julie Harmon Vance. We visited her shop last summer.
Julie, first tell me about your history in all things plants and flowers. Tell me a little bit about your business.
Well, I started my business in 2007, but prior to that, I worked from 1988 on down in the Indianapolis area at flower shops.
What was the interest? Why flowers? Why flowers and plants?
I fell into flowers. I was an artist from birth. I mean, the creative mind, the Crayola kid, the art classes in high school.
Yeah.
I did all kinds, anything artistic. My main goal was to move to Broad Ripple for, excitement.
Yes.
And I did start college for art in Indianapolis right after high school. But I found a job in a floral department at Kroger Castleton, and I loved it. And then I had a couple older people kind of take me under their wing and teach me the business. I worked there shortly, and then I moved on to full-fledged flower shops. But after that, it was my medium.
Were you surprised that you could do so much with your desire to be creative within the realm of flower arranging?
Yeah. I did not know the floral industry, and a lot of people don't understand what goes on in a flower shop, what they do, It's a big misconception that it's all beautiful and good smells, but it's extremely hard work, and it's all last minute, and you have to be a fast designer to be a successful designer. Most flower shops consider funeral work their bread and butter, but I've fallen into a lot of larger events in Flowers for Business.
One of those events is a really, really big event, Julie. I mean, probably the biggest this state has, especially in the summer, in May. Of course, I'm talking about the Indy 500. Talk about your involvement with the big race.
Well, I am the designer for the last 33 years that creates the winner's wreath for the winner. And the wreath that I create is the most photographed flower arrangement in the world.
That's awesome. Just to hear you say that sentence, does that freak you out? I mean to let that sink in for a second. The most photographed flower arrangement in the world.
Yes, I would say so. Can you think of another?
Wow. I cannot.
I mean, there's the Kentucky Derby blanket and
yeah,
the wreath for the unknown soldier. But
wow. Well, tell me how this arrangement came to be. Did they have some sort of application to do the wreath?
No,
was there a competition?
I got lucky, but I also feel like it was destiny. Mm-hmm. In a sense, I was 22 years old and working at a flower shop at Keystone at the Crossing. We had a great business there. I worked for a man and wife that are dear to me still, that were like my parents away from home when I moved.
Wow.
They owned the shop. Mm-hmm. So they went to church with a man that was working for BorgWarner. He was a litigator. And that year, Bill Cronin, that created the wreath for 32 years prior to me, the only other person that did, he passed away. And so BorgWarner was seeking a good florist. And he said, "Hey, I know a great florist."
Wow.
So that's how we acquired the order, and I was the designer there. So the three amigos here, we came up with how it looks now. And Dan actually handcrafted the letters for several years in the beginning. I do have them professionally cut out now. But when we put 33 orchids around the wreath, we thought that was so cool, and we mentioned it to BorgWarner.
Yeah.
And they thought, "Well, let's keep that." So before I made it, it did vary in the way that it looked.
Sure.
And I'm sure that Bill was trying to figure out what the best way to go with it.
Yeah.
So I at least had all his years behind me when I started. I love it exactly how it is.
Yeah.
I wouldn't change it. I think it's perfect.
Yeah. And so the letters that I'm looking at in the photo, first of all, in the shop, I have to point out that as soon as you walk in this beautiful shop, you see a wall of memories, of 500 memories with wreaths everywhere. And those are wood. Is that wood?
Yes,
wood
right
cut?
Behind you.
Yeah.
They're ready to go.
Oh my gosh.
The twins are ready.
That's awesome. So these are going to be the actual
yes
wood letters that are on the wreath this year.
Yes.
Very cool.
I don't know for sure, but it might be the last time because BorgWarner has changed their logo recently. So something we're going to talk about after the race.
So it's going to may look a little different. So
it's possible. Yeah.
So how do you take this on every year? And what is your inspiration? When do you start thinking about it? And how does this unfold for the race each year?
Well, I'm constantly thinking about it. And it's been a constant challenge to keep the exact same materials in stock because a lot of things they've discontinued. So if I catch wind of it, I'll buy a whole bunch.
Oh, wow.
And I'll figure, you know, I can make this many up until I'm 89. I'm good. I bought enough. So I do. Like the polyurethane wreath was an issue.
Oh, yeah.
So I have case after case. This year, the ribbon was discontinued.
Wow.
So I did find it. Like the ribbon company sold it off and I found it and I bought as much as I could. So
wow, the black and white checkered ribbon
well,
is
no,
what you're
it's the red, white,
to,
and blue.
Oh, the red, white,
and it's
and blue
like a
one.
French wired ribbon and you start searching online, there's just nothing like it. So
oh, wow. And go ahead.
As far as the flowers go,
yes.
My wholesalers are on board. They know, but we start talking a month or two ahead and then the flowers came today. So they usually come
really?
About Tuesday. They're right there. And they're fabulous.
Those are gorgeous.
This year's from the Netherlands.
Oh, wow.
And I was researching, it's a family-owned company, so I'm excited later to reach out and send them a picture, even if they knew, you know? Because they did go to a flower market first before, like, so they may not know where the orchids went to. So hopefully that'll be special to them.
So how are you tracking them down? How do you get
Well, the box had a lot of information.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and it's not in English, but I Googled this word and I found out this is a great big floral market interchange and you can see like train loads of flowers where buyers sit and buy. So they probably don't know that's where they're headed.
Yeah.
So I would think as an orchid grower, that'd be a huge privilege, right?
Yeah. And so these are just a beautiful white with like really bright pops of yellow and would
like
you say
burgundy,
that's fuchsia
like a burgundy
yes
center. That's what I'm shooting for always. Sometimes it's not the case, but I'm very happy with those. Now and you'll see that one over there had like a pink middle.
Oh yeah,
but I mentioned earlier he had a pink car and a pink suit and it looked really nice.
Oh yeah, that is nice.
It was a coincidence.
Absolutely. So what do you know the name of this particular orchid, like what this variety,
you know,
is
the variety,
other than beautiful?
Variety name is Virginia.
Oh, Virginia. Okay. And so what made you decide on the Virginia orchid like that for
well as I as mentioned for years I did the Fort Knox Angel flight and that company disappeared on me. They were 5 inches across, the stark white, and they had a nice burgundy center. So I'm constantly trying to find one that looks like that.
That's similar.
But it always depends on the growers and what they have available in their crop. And so it's kind of a battle of the countries right now who gets my order. So this year,
I have
Holland orchids.
Yeah. Have you ever had a year or season where it looked like, that orchid's not going to be available?
Yes.
And then what
yes,
do you do?
Yes, right here. So that was the year I had 3 different country orchids in here, but there was a lot of bad, and my wholesalers were able to FedEx some from New Zealand, and I got them on, like, Thursday.
That was Thursday? Oh, my gosh.
That was stressful. So, yeah.
Yeah, and what year was that? Because it said that tradition almost had to change this year.
2021.
When you were oh, my goodness. Oh, my God. But it always comes through, man, just to come through, and they're
just
gorgeous.
Just like the weather on race day.
That's right. So when you were, how long does it take to put this together? Start to finish. When do you? What day will you?
Well,
sit down
I'm
going to
start prepping today.
Okay.
I will fully make one Thursday and definitely make one Friday because I have some documentation going on Friday from the museum at the Motor Speedway of the wreath being made.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
And tell me about that. Why does the documentation happen?
The museum's under a remodel. And when they open in 2025, they'll have a really nice display of all the contributions that BorgWarner has given to the race, and it includes the wreath.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. So do you have any idea what else is going to be included from your...
Well, of course, the trophy will be centered, and then I know the ring is involved in the milk, and of course, the artist who creates the silver faces on the trophy.
Yeah, you're right up there with the things that people think of when you think of the... other than the cars... But when you think about the iconic images,
Yes.
The wreath is always involved.
I love that. I love that image of him drinking that milk and it's spraying everywhere.
Yeah.
That moment while it's perfect before it's smashed.
Yep. So what happened to the wreath after, like, we're looking at a photo right now of a driver who has the wreath after they want. What happens to the wreath after that?
I think the drivers really love that wreath.
They take it
home? I usually get a call right after the race asking how we can preserve it.
Oh my gosh.
If Penske wins, we have a little routine where I ship them silk orchids and they replace it in their dried greenery.
I love that idea.
So yeah, that one is special. I've heard, you know, they don't want a duplicate or, you know, it's got to be that one.
Wow.
And I have made silk versions for winning teams before.
Yeah.
But there again, you know, and the nostalgia of that one is very important, I've heard.
Oh, I mean.
And I do know that the milk does a number on those letters.
So your advice would be maybe try not to get milk on the letters. Yeah. Yeah.
They should let me in there, please.
Yeah. Can I just cover that up? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. What is the best part about doing what you do, Julie?
As far as a florist or as far as the winter's wreath?
Both. Let's start with as a florist and then we'll talk about the winter's wreath.
The best thing I do as a florist is I really help a lot of people when they're trying to express themselves at important times, which a lot of times means my funeral work. I do a tremendous amount of casket sprays and stuff for family, and a lot of them are really specialized to what, you know, that person loved during their lifetime. And many times it's been a racing theme. Mm-hmm. I do get a lot of call-outs for people out of state that'll drive in and get a winter's wreath for a funeral because that person loved Indy 500 so much. Or a casket spray that has race flags in it and things like that.
Yeah. And then tell me the best part about being involved in the race in this way.
You know, anymore I feel such an attachment to the racetrack. It just feels like it's part of me now. And I just have such a sense of pride and such a sense of Indiana pride, you know.
Do you go to the race every year?
Yes, I do, thanks to BorgWarner. I have wonderful tickets and Hallman parking.
All right, fancy. That's awesome. How long do you see yourself doing the wreath?
Well, honestly, you know, I figure by 75, 78 years old, old hands may be stiff, but, and I might be an old has-been by then.
Oh, God, out. Yeah, so I think several decades left of doing the race.
I hope so, yes. And since the style never changes, I'm good.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, we've learned a lot about the wreath and about your passion for flowers and arranging and congratulations on your success.
I appreciate that.
And we'll see you at the race.
Yes.
Julie Harmon Vance is a florist in Yorktown. We spoke to her last summer before the Indy 500. Every week, we ask all kinds of artists, what are you working on? This week, we speak to someone who works in furniture.
We are here today with Connie Beatty, an artist, a mother, and the owner of Green Velvet Creative Company. When I saw the term furniture art that you have on your website, and then I read your tagline, where art and function meet, you absolutely had my heart because I am a big fan of beautiful things that are functional. And so I was hoping you could talk to us about Green Velvet Creative.
So I am a furniture artist, and if you don't know, I take pieces of furniture that have been otherwise discarded, whether it's at the thrift store or just the side of the road, and turn it into something beautiful and functional. Again, there is a huge amount of furniture that just goes to landfill each year, mm-hmm. and I have made it a goal to minimize that just a little bit. So I focus on restoration, furniture art, and upholstery work. So depending on what type of furniture, I'll do my best to transform them into functional pieces again. So my favorite of those three aspects is furniture art and just using furniture as my canvas.
Well, can you walk us through a piece of the furniture art?
Sure.
As your canvas?
Sure.
That's intriguing.
Yeah. So I do a lot of custom work for people, as well as, you know, those finds on the side of the road. So I take them a little bit differently depending on if somebody has a specific vision that they would like to see or if it's one that I can just do whatever I would like to do.
Those are the best.
Yes, those are the best. Now the process behind, like getting ready to that point, it's the same process that I follow. I'll get a piece, clean it, and do the prep work to it. So if it needs repairs, it always will get sanded down and primed prior to anything else. And then if it's being painted, I guess if it's going restore back to original finish, I won't do that primer step. And so if it's a custom piece, we'll go off of what the client wants. So sometimes that's just painting a piece blue. But if we're doing a true furniture art is what my favorite piece, I let this piece speak to me. So I'll sometimes sit on it for a little while and think about how is this piece going to be used and what do I want the story to tell from this piece of furniture. And shape of it plays a big role in that. So you take a mid-century piece of furniture is a lot different than an antiqued piece that has curved lines and carved intricate details. So I play a lot off of, I let the piece speak to me first. And each piece is different and I find my inspiration behind that. And then the painting begins, and I use a line of paint called Wise Owl Paint. So if it's one that I want to be very artistic and I want to have blends and multicolors, I'm going to use that. It's chalk synthesis line, and it allows me to be able to manipulate the colors, and those are my favorite to do. I love being able to blend the colors and really truly use it like as an art medium.
So you say you also do upholstery.
Yeah.
Where do you find that medium, and how does it play with the painting and the embellishment, or does it?
So it does. I've just kind of stumbled. I've been painting furniture for over a decade, so that's been a long process. But the upholstery is newer to me. I've only been doing that for 2.5 years. And I had a client that I knew pretty well. And she was like, I just want you to try. Like, this piece is bad. And I want you to try to fix it. And I've done your dining chair seats, pretty basic thing. That's no problem. But she had an antique chair that was her grandmother's and she just wanted it fixed. And so I did and I tried. And everything that I've learned from upholstery is just taking it apart and putting it back together and watching some videos here and there on how to do certain things. But it's interesting. And each upholstery piece, I learn something new on. It's depending on when it was made or how it was made. They use different techniques. Now, I, for the most part, I do upholstery projects as custom projects. They take a lot of time, and they're usually big, so I don't want them just hanging out in my garage for a long time or something. So, the upholstery clients, usually they want something really impressive and cool. If they're going to put the time to, have it redone for them. So, and sometimes it includes painting. Some if it has wood, like feature arms on it or something, then we can do some painting and a mix of the two art forms. But they are some of the coolest before and afters. So some of those old upholstery pieces are pretty rough looking, and then when they're done, they're pretty impressive.
They like look completely different.
Yeah,
you feel like a massive transformation. Mm-hmm. Often, is there anything else you'd like to share with us about your art and your process? Or
Yeah. So I do, I would like to share, I do sell the type of paint that I use as well. It's Wisell furniture paint, and I sell it out at Caldwell Antique Mall and on the north side of Muncie, as well as on my website. They're about to open a new store downtown Muncie called Hoosier Made. And I am opening a second location within there that I'll have my furniture art and furniture paint there. So that's one way if somebody wants to try do furniture art on their own. That's a good spot to start. And then I'm always happy to help in that. I really love encouraging people just to create. I think anybody can refinish furniture. Within the last 6 months, I've started a subscription box that has decoupage paper and furniture paint in it, and as well as some different embellishments that get sent out each month to people that want to be creative and kind of work alongside with and work on their process. And I'm happy to be able to share that with other people and then see what they're doing and encourage what they're trying to create too.
That's wonderful. Recycling, reusing, creating things from what has already been and giving it a new life is pretty amazing.
Yeah, thanks.
I appreciate you being here today. And can you please tell us your web address and maybe the address of this new store? I don't know if you know that yet, but.
So my web address is greenvelvetcreativeco.com. You can find examples of my artwork. You can find the furniture paint and the subscription box there. I'm super active on Facebook and Instagram, just on keeping updates on projects that I'm working on. And then the new store, Hoosier Made, is downtown. It's in the Patterson Building, right on Walnut Street.
Great. Well, thank you again for being here with us today, Connie.
Thank you for having me.
Michelle, I have a question for you.
I hopefully have an answer, Kara.
Do you know what time it is?
Oh, yes, I do. It's time for the arts calendar.
Excellent. The Ball State Wind Ensemble will perform Saturday, April 12th at Sursa Performance Hall on campus. The Wind Ensemble is under the direction of Thomas Canneva, director of bands. This concert will be a celebration of his career as he plans to retire at the end of the semester.
On Wednesday, April 16th, the Public Domain Theater series at Cornerstone Center for the Arts continues. The film shown will be Carnival of Souls, haunting organ music, eerie abandoned carnivals, and a mysterious woman caught between worlds. Carnival of Souls is a spine-chilling dive into surreal horror. The fun begins at 6:30.
On Friday and Saturday, April 11th and 12th, you can enjoy a guided meditation experience at Charles W. Brown Planetarium at Ball State, with views of an amazing sunset as you travel to the North Pole to relax under a night sky filled with stars and glimpses of the Northern Lights.
Oh, that sounds nice.
The calming vibes begin at 5 p.m. Also at the planetarium this weekend, you can check out solar superstorms. Learn about the sun's powerful magnetic fields and super hot plasma.
Super hot!
And you can go on a space mission with Jack and Annie of the Magic Treehouse series. Details at bsu.edu planetarium.
It's showtime! Beetlejuice is haunting the stage at Clues Memorial Hall in Indy through April 14th. Based on Tim Burton's film, this hilarious musical tells the story of Lydia Dietz, a strange and unusual teenager whose whole life changes when she meets a recently deceased couple and a demon with a thing for stripes.
Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
Don't you do it. Don't you do it.
Okay. The Cincinnati Circus Duo will perform at 3 and 6 p.m. on Saturday, April 12th at Arts Place in Portland. Fun for the whole family, these acrobats and aerial artists will amaze and inspire, and they will chat with the kiddos between performances.
Awesome. Jesus Christ Superstar continues this weekend at Muncie Civic Theater. For more info about the musical, go to MuncieCivic.org. And right next door, you can catch As If Cassandra in the Casaza Family Studio Theater. With shows April 11th through 13th, this show is a modern twist on the ancient Cassandra story as it follows a high school cheerleader as she attempts to thwart a tragic fate.
Opening April 17th at Ball State, it's Stages. Stages is an inclusive and collaborative production that welcomes artists from all forms, dance, music, song, visual arts, and any other mode of creative expression. This production invites participants from across the Department of Theater and Dance and the broader Ball State community to bring their unique voices and perspectives to the stage. Cast members will have the opportunity to devise, share stories and experiences, and blend their talents with those of their peers. The goal is to create a rich tapestry of expression. BSU.edu/theater is the place to go for more info.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah,
Cool. If you have some artsy stuff for our listeners, let us know at indianapublicradio.org/contact, then click Pop of Culture.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by Psi Iota Xi. Additional support comes from the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, and sustaining members of IPR. You can support local programming today at indianapublicradio.org.
And that's our show. Our general manager is Phil Hoffman, and our producer is designated hitter Luke Jones. Our show was hosted by me, Michelle Kinsey, who's always out in left field.
And me, Kara Duquette, Cubs fan and catcher of culture. Pop of Culture is a production of IPR on the campus of Ball State University. This week on Pop of Culture. This week on Pop of Culture, we're all in on Tiny Desk.
I love that.
Swallow your coffee.
Mm-mm. Swallow your coffee.
That almost came out of my nose.